At this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight, our very own Dwight. Come on up, buddy. Yeah, come on.
Should I get the block out? Can you guys see me? Can you guys see me? I want to be seen. You know, I spoke at Pioneer. No, no, you didn't. You're lying. No. My name is Dwight, grateful recovery alcoholic. I'm grateful to be sober. Grateful to be here at Pioneers Men's Recovery House. I've been coming here to this house since 81 when I got my first 502. And then I came back again in 85 when I got another one. Then a week later I got another one. I'm a drunk. Every time I had a car in the 80s, I got a 502. I am not lying. You know? But it didn't start right there. It started in Texas with me. In Corsicana, Texas. Anybody been to Corsicana, Texas? It's south of Dallas, you know, way out in the country, you know. I was born at Navarro County Hospital. That's where my problem started, me. Didn't know it, I thought I was perfect. It's everybody else's fault but mine. But my father was, used to live in Nacogdoches, Texas, and my mother lived in, it was called Powell, Texas, which is in Navarro County. And they met. My father was a sharecropper, and he was working on my grandfather's farm. He met my mother, and voila, me, you know. He was stationed up at Alameda, and my mother was up there going to Berkeley for her teacher's credentials. Then he got his permanent orders down here to 32nd Street. And she came down here to San Diego State with me and my brother Michael. And later on, we had Derek. And we moved to Southeast San Diego over there at 47th and Market. And we lived there for like 10 years. And it was cool over there. It was, you know, cow dairies. It was San Diego back there was real rural. It was country. You know, cow dairies and, you know, produce there. Chula Vista was like backwoods, you know. We moved from Southeast San Diego in 71 to Chula Vista. And I remember we were coming down the 5 freeway. The 5 freeway was only like maybe two or three lanes back there, two lanes, you know. And I was like, Dad, you knew, where are we going? Shut up, boy, sit back there. Sit back, you know. Sit down, shut up. And we get off on Main Street, and there is it's Lawrence Auto Records there now, but it used to be a big-ass dairy right there, Industrial and Main Street. You could smell the money. Yeah, you know? And we drive down to Melrose, and across the street on Melrose and Main Street was strawberry fields, as far as the eye can see, just strawberry fields. And the river bottom, that was like Disneyland. You know, that river bottom was fishing and whatever, you know, riding your bikes in the mud and drinking in the river bottom. And I went to Roar Elementary. And I remember I had this teacher, Mr. Bockham. And he had dropped something on the floor. He told me to pick it up. I said, no, you pick it up. You dropped it. You know? And I went to the principal's office. That's back when they got these paddles, these wooden paddles. Hold the desk. Nowadays, they go to prison for that. But back then, you know, my mother was like, we should have picked it up. I'm like, you should have picked, you're my mother. You should have kicked his ass, you know? And so one day, we had just met these friends, our new friends down there in Chula Vista, and they said, we're going to meet down at John's house late at night. So me and my brother Michael snuck out of the house, ran down the street. You know, and the river bottom used to bring in fog, and it smelled like a river bottom, you know. And so we ran down the street, and we were back there in the patio. There was about maybe 5, 6, 7 of us or whatever, you know. And they were passing around a bottle of Boone's Farm. Boone's for that, the good stuff, you know. It was probably like a quarter back then. you know. And commercial weed. Commercial weed's like dirt with weeds in it, with, you know, sticks. You know, it doesn't really get you high, it just gives you a headache. You got these little white seeds and more stems and, you know, and they give you a lot, too. I mean, for $10, they give you a big bag, you know. It's huge, you know. I couldn't put it in my pocket. You know, I used to put it in my sock. And that's where I started drinking. The day we came, when I came back home, Michael jumped through the window and opened up the front door for me. And the next morning when I woke up, I was like, wow, this is it right here. I don't need no more help. I don't need nobody. I'm going to do this all my own. And I started ditching school. We would ditch school, go down to Maxfield, and drink. You know, back then it's a park now, but it used to be a big field with weeds, and there wasn't no park. You know, and we would drink down there. We drink at the River Bomb. We drink all around Chula Vista. And then we moved from there to where I live at now, down the street from Castle Park on Hilltop and Palomar. And when I moved there, my friend Bobby lived next door. His sister, her husband used to sell weed, the bricks and the cellophane paper, you know, the red and green or whatever it is. Looked like Christmas presents, you know. And I got with Bobby, and Bobby introduced me to this one guy that sold better weed, right? And I was like in seventh grade. And he's like, hey, this is Dwight, you know, he's cool. Dude, you gotta be cool. You know, you can't be just showing up somebody's house that sells, you know, drugs. And I, you know, drank and used and got loaded for the next 17. I didn't make it to 20, I made it to 17. It's more than enough. More than enough for me. And went to junior high school. Junior high school was kind of like a lull. Matter of fact, in junior high school, I used to write haikus. I forgot what haikus are now, but I used to write them, though. You know, I think it was like, had to be, you know, letters that have 12 letters in them or some, you know, whatever it was. And they put mine up in this case right there by the office. You know, Dwight Crawford, haiku. You know, that was probably like the high point of my scholastic career. You know, it was before the storm, you know. It was before, you know, and back then you didn't have to pass to go to high school. You just went to summer school. It was like, you know, doing time, you know. Just come down here and, you know, do your summer school, and then you go up to high school. And you have to duck and dodge the seniors throwing eggs at you and shit. You know, they had a nickname for it, so I forgot what it was. And so me and Bobby, and matter of fact, me and Bobby were born one day apart. And me and Bobby, I would go over his house in the morning time and smoke Colombian Gold and drink and then go to school. But then when I get to school, I'm like, you know what, I can't. I'm going home. And I was just, you know what, I'm sick. Can I get a hall pass? Let me get the hall pass. I'd have a stack of hall passes underneath my bed at home. And that's what I did. I just did school. You know, my mother was a teacher. My father was in the Navy. You know, and I would wait for them to go to work. I'd go up to the high school, get my bottle out of my locker, and walk back home. I lived 5 minutes away from the school, and I could not stay there, could not even get there, you know. And so one day one of my friends said, Dwight, you haven't done shit. You know, why don't you go out for the football team? I'm like, football team? You gotta run. You gotta, my life and football are not, you know. I like sitting down, just getting loaded. You're talking about running bleachers now, you know, in the heat. And I went out for the football team, and I made it on the football team. I wasn't no starter, you know, but I made it though. But I was still getting high though, still drinking, you know. We would do shots before practice, before games. could have made us run faster. That's what I thought. Yeah. And then one day the counselor called me in and said, well, Dwight, you know, you're going to be 18 in September, and we're going to help you into adult school. And I said, I could do that myself. I don't need your help. And I left. And so now I left. Now I'm out in the real world, you know, jobs, you know, paying bills and get out of my damn parents' house. My father, it was like my father, then God, you know, and my father was like, he used to have a saying. He used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He worked over at NOSC out there in Point Loma, and he would bang on, me and my brother Michael slept in the same room, and he would bang on the door and say, grown men, don't come home drunk, get a goddamn job, stay out of my refrigerator, you don't pay for shit. And he used to say that every morning. Every morning. I mean, I would just lay in bed awake just waiting for it. You know, and then on the weekends, he would come in there and just wake us up in the middle of nowhere. Get out of my house. I'm sick and tired of seeing you. You know, my mother would be gone shopping or church or whatever, you know. And here's me and my brother, no money in our pocket, just walking down the street. Just like, wow, going down to the park and just sit down at that park thinking, well, maybe somebody would give me a beer. Maybe some. I used to sleep. I had this bed where they had drawers underneath them. It had a little section, right? And so I would sleep underneath the bed so he wouldn't wake me up and throw me out of the house and put clothes on my feet because my feet stuck out a little bit. Put clothes on my feet so he couldn't hear it. But the only thing was I snored. Yeah, what's he doing down there? Get your ass! And he would wake me up and bam, hit my head on the bottom of the bed. I'm like, God, you know, Jesus, help me! You know, there's got to be a better way than this. And I just drank. Drinking was not the problem. It was my father. It was the counselor. It was everything else but alcohol was the problem. If they would just leave me alone and just let me sit in the park and drink and come home drunk and pass out in the bed drunk. And eat their food and their and all that, everything would be fine. Just let me do that, you know. But my father was like, "Nah, you know, you getting out of my damn house. You getting out of my house." And so 1981 came, and I was working for my mother as a teacher's aide, and my brother had this car they co-signed for it, and. He got into a wreck down the street trying to do four-wheel drive with the car or whatever it was. So they entrusted me with the car now. I'm working with the school, San Diego School District, and then I got the car. And I was out at, me and a couple of my friends were out at Pio Pico Park out past Otay late at night. I let his girlfriend drive the car because she was going through driver's ed anyway. And we ended up in a ditch at over past midnight, down in by this stream, you know, you couldn't even see the car. I thought it was a dream at first. I got out of the car, you know, my chin was bleeding a little bit for hitting the dashboard, and I got up, and all I seen was like dust and weeds, and you know, the barbed wire fence was wrapped around the front tires, and I just said, my father's gonna kill me. He is going to kill me. It's gonna be a legal execution tonight, you know. And my mother's gonna sit there and watch him do it, you know. And so the tow truck comes out there. He says, "I can't get that. I can't even see the damn thing." So he drives me home with all the tow lights flashing and everything. My father looks out the bedroom window. There's no car in the driveway. It's just me. We get back in his car and drive back out there. With him, Dad, look at my, I got a scratch right here. Look, I hit my, bam. All the way out past Otay Lakes and back home again. Then I was sentenced here to Pioneers. I came here for two meetings. They show you the highway patrol, you know, scary pictures, scare you to try to scare you straight and all that stuff and everything. And matter of fact, me and one of my friends, we grew up together and drank there. We got a 502 about the same time. And we would come to this meeting right here, sit way in the back, way in the back. I don't want to catch what you guys got, you know. And, I did my two meetings, and I was in the wind. Didn't stop drinking. This is my damn life. I do what I want to do. Ain't no damn judge going to tell me what to do, you know. And then in 85, me and one of my friends were at the Padre game, and he kept on begging me, let's just go home. We were drunk. Let's just go home. I said, nah, we're going to my friend's house over at Mission Beach. We're going to Mission Beach. We get over there, and there used to be a Jack in the Box on the corner across the street from the roller coaster. And we come out of that drive-thru, and I hit some water in the gutter. And I had a Chevy Chevette, you know, stick shift. And that thing just, and there was a cop at the intersection and see me. And he's following me with the lights down. Rudy's eating his hamburger like it's going out of style. I kept on saying, Rudy, give me mine. And the cop said, don't you touch that damn thing. And Rudy left with my car. He let Rudy drive home with my car. And he took me to jail. Probably because I was black. That was probably. You know. Alcohol didn't have nothing to do with it. You know, they didn't like me because I was black. That's what it was. You know. And went back to jail. And then the next week, got another one. And this time, this was like the Hall of Fame one for me. So I had a friend who used to play pro ball with the Detroit Tigers. He was down in spring training. And he came back home. We were going to have a welcome home party for him and everything. He was just as much as drunk as I was. He just ran faster. And you know. And so he lived up in Skyline. So I went and picked up Ron, and we were down there behind the Jack in the Box down at Bonita at the golf course drinking. We had beer, we had whiskey, we had weed. We were just, boy, we were doing it up. And we go back to his house to the party. His mother says, can you guys go down? There's a red and yellow barrel taco shop down in Imperial going into Lemon Grove. So he said, can you guys go down and get me some roll tacos? Well, yeah, I'll go get the roll tacos. So we're going down the street. We got the roll tacos. We're coming back up. And there's a police station right there, right next to the AMPM gas station. Now, see, look, I'm smart. I ain't going to go in front of the police station. I ain't stupid. There might be some cops out there. Arrest me. I'm going to go down the alley in the back. You know, I blacked out, hit a curb, rolled the car down this little hill into this man's backyard. Me and Ron jump out of the car. The cops are right there. Freeze. They separate me and Ron. I see Ron pointing at me. He walked home with the tacos. And the cop said, I thought you was a UFO. I seen the lights in the sky and stuff. And he said, come on, let's go. And they put me in jail again. And this time I was sentenced to 16 months in Alcoholics Anonymous. How in the hell am I going to drink and come to these damn meetings? And they just wanted me to come like, you know, maybe two or three times a week. I wasn't coming no times a week, you know. So I started going. Right now, I would go up to Bayside Lounge Club. That was my place up there because it was closer than here. You know, I used to ride my bicycle or take a bus. Most time, it was on a bicycle. And so I would go up to Bayside Lounge Club. The first place I remember meeting was Joe Lopez. I used to think Joe was from Louisiana because he had some kind of, you know, Louisiana dialect or something. I didn't know he was born and raised right here in Chula Vista, you know. And I would go to those meetings, but, you know, I'd be with my brothers and my friends, stuff down at the park, and I had to stop drinking and then go to the meeting, get the damn card signed. And by the time I got back, they were gone. The drinking was gone. So I figured out another way where I can drink all day and keep on going to these damn meetings. I would go to a 7 a.m. meeting at the NRC at 314 Parkway. But I would come late all the time. You know, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'll come, but I'll come when I get there. But only problem is, my sponsor, Motorcycle Don, he used to go to that meeting all the time. all the time. Matter of fact, every meeting I ever went to, Don was there, like that dog in the cartoon that just showed up out of nowhere. You know, that was Don. He went to every meeting I ever went to. And so I would come, and Don said, you know what? Sick and tired of you coming late, we're going to have a group conscience. And the group conscience was they weren't going to sign my card unless I got there at 7 a.m. on time. And there was no, I used to beg my mother, Dwight, I'm going the opposite way. She worked over in Paradise Hills. Mama, please, I'm going to jail. Dwight, it's your responsibility. You get there, I'd have to ride my bicycle in the rain in 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would get there. But after the meeting, though, I would reward myself with a beer from across the street at the 7-Elevens. You know, kind of rationalize it, you know. You know, have me a little beer. Little drinky poo, you know. And I did that for the next, I don't know, two, whatever the, you know, the SB 38 program was, and never stopped drinking. Not one time did I say, you know, I'm a, you know, change my life. Matter of fact, when I got out of the program and stuff, I had a warrant out for me because I didn't pay the fine. So I had a friend of mine that moved to Clarksville, Tennessee. I have no idea where Clarksville is to this day. But I went, drunk. I got on a Greyhound bus. My mother gave me a few dollars, and I went down to the store, got me some alcohol and some weed, and got on this Greyhound bus. For the next 3 days, I was on this bus. We went to Cave Creek, Arizona. I don't know where it is. You know, ended up in Dallas. I said, you know, I was thinking about just going to my grandparents' house. I was like, that's too close. Texas is too close. You gotta go farther, you know. And so we were in the desert part of Texas, and I see a bridge out there in the middle of the desert in Texas. I mean, why would they put a bridge? I said, well, maybe they got flash floods. Maybe, you know, something like that. I fell asleep or woke back up, and that bridge is still there. And I'm thinking, that's gotta be like a 100-mile bridge. You know, then I realized it wasn't a bridge, it was a reflection of the bus window frames. And I was like, man, you are, don't you ever share it with nobody, you know? Don't you ever say it. I went to Clarksville, Tennessee, came back home. I'm going to change my life now. So I go down to the, I went for a job at this place called Barter Roofing. I used to be a roofer. And on the way back home, I said, you know what? I'm going to go up to this Raymond court desk. I'm going to, you know, get my court date rescheduled. And I'm going to change my life, you know. Well, I went inside there to the Raymond court desk. The lady at the desk says, don't worry. Somebody will be here to help you. Just sit there. Have a seat. The bailiff comes out and says, your name is Dwight Cedric Crawford? I said, yeah. He said, come with me and put me in jail for the next 30 days. I said, no, I'm getting rescheduled. Don't worry, we'll reschedule it for you. You know, for the next 30 days, I was in jail. I got out of jail, and me and my friend Manuel's gone now because of this disease. And me and Manuel were down at General Roker Park. One morning, it was a Thursday, April 26, 1990. We were down there drinking, didn't know what we were going to do. And I said, let's go to the Padre game. Yeah, let's go. So we're going to this Padre game. We go by this job site. We used to be roofers. This guy named Gary. Gary was on fire about AA. He was 3 years sober. Gary was like 6'7", called everybody Bodie. So we go by this job site. Man was up there talking to Gary about borrowing his hot kettle and stuff. And I'm down in the truck drinking. And I said, you know, I'm going to go over there and say what's up to Gary. So I get up there, and Gary says to me, why don't you come to a meeting with me before you die? You look like shit. That's what he said to me. And then start talking to Manuel again. I got off the roof. You know, why Gary said to me, man? That's, you know, Gary, he's crazy. He's going to that A&A program now. A&A. You know, so we get to the stadium club down there on Fairmont, and we're drinking more. And we get to the 7-Eleven, and we get more alcohol to buy our tickets, and we're drinking inside the place in the stadium. And I'm drinking, and I'm belligerent, and I'm yelling, "Padres suck, Cubs suck, you suck." Everybody tell me to sit down and shut up, shut the hell up. Manuel's telling me to shut the hell up, and we're coming home, and I'm on the 805 freeway, and I remember what Gary says to me. I mean, I'm seeing his face and everything, and I kept on saying, "Dwight, why don't you just go ahead and jump out of the car now? You've been doing this shit since you were a kid. You ain't never going to stop. You ain't never going to change. This is it for you." So I opened up Manuel's truck door, put my foot on the freeway right there before L Street. Manuel's got the back of my collar. He's yelling at me. I'm crying. He's telling me, "You just need more beer. It's going to be okay. It's going." And I'm thinking, man, if I jump out of this car and don't die, this shit's going to hurt. This shit is going to hurt. I am going to be paralyzed from my eyeballs down, can't drink no more, can't walk. And everybody asking me, "Dwight, why'd you do it? Why'd you do it?" So I got back in the car. We get down to Ernie's Liquor. I got out of the car and walked home. I'm laying down on the couch, on the floor. I kept on saying, "God help me, God help me." I got off the floor, called Manuel up, got Gary's phone number. His wife calls him up, called Gary up from his martial arts practice. He took me to this meeting over on El Cajon Boulevard. It was called the Men's 449 meeting at the Community Connections. And I started going to meetings with Gary. The following day, I re-enrolled into Chula Vista Adult School. And I'm walking up 4th Avenue to a Bayside Lounge Club. I don't know how God did this, but Don was pulling in the same time I was walking in that parking lot. And he looked over at me and says, "What you doing back here? Did you wrap your car around a telephone pole?" And I was like, "Who is this guy right here? I have no idea who he is." Went into the meeting. John Blakely was walking through with his snazzy suit on. And John's like, 6'8", whatever. And he's a lawyer. And I'm like, "That's what I want to do. I want to be a lawyer and get me a red Porsche." And John said, "Dwight, we can still drink. We just can't drink today." And I'm like, "This guy tried to get me killed." And one day me and John went out to play basketball, and John cheated. To this day, he cheated. But anyways, he said he's won. So I came back to Bayside Lyle Club. Don was coming out of the meeting. I said, "Don, I don't want John to be my sponsor. I want you." And Don said, "I thought I already was your sponsor, because I asked him to be my sponsor at 314 Parkway. And so me and Don just started doing it. And he said something to me to this day. He said, "Dwight, if you don't understand what we do here, there is nothing I can do for you. It's either this program right here or I die. For me, to drink is to die. It's not getting drunk no more. It's not hanging out at the park no more. It's like my brother. Yellow eyes, organs shutting down, and then I die. There's not going to be no fanfare, no parade. It's not going to be Butch and Sundance. It's not going to be none of that. It's just going, Dwight's dead now because he stopped going to meetings, because he stopped working the steps, because he stopped hanging around us, other alcoholics." Don went to meetings. Anywhere, in my car, in a canyon, here, whatever. "Just go to the damn meeting," he'd say to me. I got here, and there was old timers just littered this place. People would, this place and smoke. And smoke. It was a permanent cloud of smoke. But these people have this, they were characters. This was like the card room back there. Playing cards with their dollar bills and red hell, "Get in here, you old son of a..." These people were just, I just love the way drunks talk, their whole story. That's why I keep on coming back here. I love alcoholics. I love drunks. Practicing, recovering, remind me of what I used to do. What it could be for me if I don't listen. Learn to listen and listen to learn. Can you goddamn listen, Dwight? He didn't, oh, poor baby Dwight, it's going to be okay. You guys getting cakes tonight? Let me tell you something. They talked real nice about you. Don used to come over. There's Dwight. He got 90 days. Tell him how you did. And he was, pew, he was gone. You know? You know, don't get up here and tell your story for, you know, about how great you are, Dwight. One time I was getting my 7-year cake over at Pathfinder's. And I was, you know what, go and ask Don how good you're doing. Hey, Don, I'm doing pretty good, huh? You want to know? I'll tell you. If you really want to know, I'll tell you. No, that's okay, Don. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I do not want to know. You know? Motorcycle Don. You know, when I was getting sober, he says, I want your mother's phone number. I said, for what? I want to know the truth. I want to know the goddamn truth. One day, this guy, Brian, was getting a 60-day token. I had 30 days, and he was over at the Warm and Friendly on F Street. Yay. And Richard Real, all the gang was there. Richard Real, Larry, Butcher Dick, all those guys were there. And they were having a 4th of July celebration. And I was sitting by myself. Everybody was sitting together, and I was just fuming about something. Just fuming, you know, alcoholism. And I said, if you guys think that I'm just going to come in here and forget about my family and friends, you can just forget about that. Matter of fact, after this meeting, I'm going to go get drunk. And Richard comes over, son, hit my phone number. Give me a call. I'll take you down to the docks. It's the bar over there on 3rd Avenue. Yeah. I get home and I called him. Where you at? I'll come get you. I said, no, that's okay. That's all right. So my family died in 17, my father, then my mother in 18. My father in 18, my mother in 19, Don in 20, my little brother in 21. And boy, I was going through it. Whew, going through it. But I could hear Don say, Dwight, hold on to God's hand. Hold on to God. This too shall pass. It's just your time to go through it. Everybody's gone through it, Dwight. It's your time now. I remember when Don's mother died, his nephew died. You know, just don't skip a beat. You know, and then this year, our brother Michael died from alcoholism. And you know, me and Michael drank together from the time I was 12 years old, 6th grade. He was in 8th grade. And he would come to meetings. He went to prison. And he, you know, he just did not want to stop drinking. Did not want to stop drinking. And the day I went to his house, my father had left us a life insurance policy. And I said, Michael, we got to go sign this stuff down to notary or we ain't going to get the money. And I lied to him just to get him out of the house. You know, he would sleep all the time. And so I get him to the notary place, and I'm like, Michael, you walking pretty good, you know, what you're walking. But then we're going to get something to eat. And I looked around, and I seen his eyes, and they were yellow. And I called my sponsor, Pete Morris. He said, Dwight, get him to the hospital now. I got him to the hospital, and the doctor tells me we got to put a camera down in his stomach because he's been bleeding a lot. His bathroom was just covered with dry blood. And they say, but the only problem is his blood pressure is so low that if we do that and he doesn't wake up, he's going to be laying there with an oxygen tube. And I explained it to Michael. Real simple. He said, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to gamble with my life. I've been drinking whiskey this long just to see what happens. And he died in 20 days. 20 days. And Greg went with me up to go see him and stuff. And I met this lady named Sheila on the online meetings. And she grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut. She's 40 years sober. And in 2 years sober, she just got up and left him and moved to Switzerland. And so I met her, and we became friends on the Zoom and everything. And she wrote the eulogy for Michael. She was just talking to me about Michael's life and everything. And she wrote this beautiful eulogy and sent it to my house. And I'm like, what is this? And I was like, what the hell? She didn't tell me she was doing it. She didn't, you know. And she says, Dwight, all this stuff you've been through, let's go to Paris. I'll meet you in Paris. Oh. And I said, you got to be kidding me. You might be an axe murderer. You know, you want something out of me, you know? And I talked to Pete about it. He said, Dwight, go. I said, he said, why not? I said, I'm scared. He said, Dwight, you can't be in faith and fear. It's got to be one or the other. I used to always say that phrase, faith without works is dead. Don used to put my feet to it. You say you got faith, let me see. And so I bought my ticket to Paris. I'm thinking, Dwight, man, you have no idea where you're going. You're going to end up Timbuktu. You know, and I took this plane by myself. Well, with God, too, because I was praying my ass off. You know. And I took off to Paris. Ended up in Heathrow. Right when I step off the plane, your flight has been canceled. I said, I knew it. I knew I shouldn't have came to this damn place. You know, and waited there until about 8:30 that night. Took the plane to Paris, and I'm driving through this cobblestone. I'm like, this place is old. You know, woke up the next morning, and it's raining and it's cold. And I went straight down, got me a pastry, a Paris pastry. And then I spoke at this meeting at 10. Oh, they were dragging me around to all these damn meetings, and I met Sheila and our friend Sebastian, and we just went all around Paris. And you know, I want to tell you about this. There's a church there, and it's a monument to Jesus Christ. And it's called the Sacré Cœur, and it's way on top of this hill in this neighborhood called Montmartre. It's beautiful up there. And this church is just like, it's got all these little chapels in the side, St. Luke and St. Michael, and Jesus is like at the front, just huge. And my friend Troy had just found $10 outside. He said, Dwight, let's light a candle for Michael. And I'll light one for my brother, too. So we lit a candle for Michael, and, you know, we went around looking at the Sacré Cœur and around the neighborhood and stuff. Later on that night, I was looking at my phone, and I noticed the date was September 16th, Michael's birthday. There is a God. I met this guy on the Zoom meeting, Sebastian. He's from England, but he lives in Paris now. And he's a drunk, boy. He was sober 45 days. I've known him for a while on the Zoom meetings, but for the last 5 days, because he knew the trains and stuff, the metros, he took me all around Paris. We went to every meeting you can think of. You know, we were walking 5, 6, 7, 8 miles a day, going up these damn stairs, in and out of the damn train stations. I'm like, damn, Sebastian, when's the top gonna come? When are we gonna come out of this damn place? We went to this place called the catacombs. And the catacombs is way, way underground. And I don't know how these people did this, but I was in the front of the line, and we're going down this real tight staircase. It's just going round and round, and it's real, real tight. And Sebastian said, hey, Dwight, we're going to go down 133 stairs. And I'm like, what the? Where are we going? And we get down there, everything's tight. Everything's real tight. You know, and I'm, you know, I'm ducking down because I'm hitting my head on the ceiling, and it's black down there, and there's lights, and Sebastian said, Dwight, we're going to be down here over an hour. I said, no, I'm not. And I turned around and started going against the traffic. Excuse me, I got to go. And I got the hell out of that place. No. I said, I'm going across the street to that restaurant. Give me something to eat. I can't do it. We went to the Gardens of Luxembourg, the Versailles Palace. And Sebastian took me all this stuff. Now, you know how we always say that follow directions and, you know. So me and this girl, Marie, she met me on the second day I was there. She said, Dwight, you here yet? And we met. We went to this meeting over at the American Cathedral. After meeting me, her and her friend went to get something to eat. On the way back, we took a picture with the Eiffel Tower in back of us. Now I'm kind of feeling myself like, yeah, Dwight has arrived. I'm in I'm somebody. I'm in Paris now. I ain't, you know, I ain't that same Dwight and Chula Vista no more about being scared in Paris. I am it. You know, so I'm, you know, trying to text this picture because I want everybody to know I'm in Paris. I'm somebody now. You know, look at the Eiffel Tower behind me with these two friends of mine, Marie and Victoria. So I'm looking at this thing. I'm trying to send this thing to my roommate, Eddie. I wasn't walking where I was going, and I hit one of those goddamn cobblestones, and I went flying in the air. And then I landed on the ground. One of my friend's mother said, don't worry, the ground will catch you. And it hurt. It hurt a lot. You know? It was bleed. And Marie, she was laughing like a crazy person. Mouth wide open, just bah. Oh my God. She's sociopath, psychotic. You know? She's supposed to be caring and kind. This AA. You know? You ain't supposed to laugh at me in my face. You know, you're supposed to. And Victoria came up. She's crazy, Dwight. She's crazy. You know, I had a wonderful time in Paris. And Sheila, boy, she's everything. Everything she says she is, you know. She's a real alcoholic. Faith without works is dead. When I got sober, I used to have this car, and Don told me, don't drive the car without registration and license. I got down to the club, and how'd you get down here so fast? Look at my new car. I'll tell you how to drive that damn car. So I got a ticket in the car. Then all my old warrants came up, and the public defender said, you might do a year and a half in jail because of your old warrants. And I said, Don said, well, you're already talking about faith without works is dead. Let's go to court, Dwight. Your faith. Let's go. I said, nah, do your job, cops. Come find me. You know. But I went to court. I was scared to death. The judge says, count this and count this and save me the fines. And my friend's mother used to work down at the courthouse. Diana. She got, I don't know how she did, she got it reduced down to like under $500, and then she told me, I don't want to see her no more. She used to see me in there all the time, like I used to work there or something. You know, I was always there. Now I can go to their house. Danny don't yell at me no more, you know. And his boy Mike's father is serious. Even his jokes are serious, you know. I am so grateful and thankful. I just stuck around. You know, I just stuck around. All I do is show up. God does the rest. That's what I gotta say, thanks.
Man, I've been around here for a while. This is the first time I've ever heard you speak, Dwight. Thank you very much. That was great. One more time for Dwight. I would also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. Let's circle up.